You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Credit card companies know a lot more about you than you might think. Because they have been faced with huge losses, they've turned to consumer profiling and research to find out who you are, all in an effort to get you to pay your bills. New York Times reporter Charles Duhigg's report on their practices, called What Does Your Credit Card Know About You, appeared in yesterday's Times Magazine. I'm very pleased that it brings him to our show today. Hi.
Thanks so much for having me.
Are all of the major credit card companies engaged in at least some form of data mining right now?
I think so. I mean, it's pretty hard to get credit card companies to tell you exactly what they're doing. But this is really the state of the art in the industry. If a card company is not doing this right now, they're at a huge competitive disadvantage. So everyone is trying to use what they get to learn about their customers.
But how are they different from an awful lot of other companies that are doing consumer profiles?
You're right. Every industry does this. The difference with credit card companies is that they get so much more data than almost every other industry. I mean, when you think about it, you probably use your card, what, once or twice a day on average, or a card. Multiply that across the 300 million Americans, many of whom have credit cards. It's just credit card companies just touch our lives in many more ways than other industries.
So they're looking for certain variables that will determine our level of risk?
Absolutely. Absolutely. What they're doing is they're looking at how we use our cards and other information about our lives to try and forecast, are you the type of person who's going to run up a whole bunch of debts and then walk away from them?
Well, are they looking at what we buy, or are they also gathering information about our personal lives?
They're gathering all the information that they can. The most obvious data that they have is what we buy, how we use our credit cards. But in addition, there's credit bureaus out there, there's information groups that collect other types of information, and they use that to evaluate us.
Do they all pull this stuff together?
Not from company to company. So there's credit bureaus like Experian, TransUnion, that probably most of your listeners are familiar with. Those sell information to any credit card company. But in general, companies are fairly proprietary about the information they gather.
Although I understand the average American carries 5 credit cards in his or her wallet.
That's right.
Which would suggest that there are at least 5 different banks or credit card companies that know an awful lot about me.
Absolutely. And keep in mind that sometimes some of those, because of mergers, some of those companies become one company. And so then they can look across. And in addition, if you have a credit card company from your bank, for instance, they might also look at data from your checking account, your savings account, your mortgage. And there's a lot of places they can learn about us.
Is this self-protective because the credit card industry is in such financial difficulty right now? But why are they?
Well,
because people are reneging on paying their debts?
Absolutely. Because defaults on credit cards tend to track unemployment pretty closely. People use their credit cards and rely on them, and then they lose their job and they can't pay the debts back. And so as unemployment has gone up over the last year or so, so have defaults on credit cards. In addition, keep in mind that, and we all know this, a lot of the companies gave cards to people who during good times were good citizens and during bad times have less financial resources.
And as you point out, at its peak in 2005, the credit card industry sent out 10.2 billion solicitations for cards. That's
right.
More than the entire population of the planet.
Right, right.
Obviously, all of those solicitations weren't to people with good credit scores. And I guess it didn't matter to them then, but it does now when we have a situation where delinquency rates are up a third since 2006.
Yeah. There's over $300 billion over the next 5 years of credit card debts that people are going to walk away from.
Well, was the credit card industry encouraging a certain amount of irresponsibility in their customers?
It's an interesting question because it sort of gets to the heart of what you think of as fairness or irresponsibility in a financial system. I mean, if someone gets a credit card and they intend to pay back what they charge to it, and then they find that they can't, and a credit card company doesn't have any recourse to go after them, is it irresponsible on anyone's behalf?
Well, if they're encouraging us and encouraging teenagers to have more credit cards than we need and run up high debts, then you have to wonder whether it's in their best interest, and I hope you'll forgive the pun.
No, absolutely. I think that's the core question, is that credit card companies certainly were giving away cards to people who, during a downtime, everyone knew would not pay off their debts. But much like the housing economy and the banking economy and everything else, everyone was essentially kind of wagering on how long it's going to take for that downturn to happen. And now it's come and even bigger than anyone anticipated.
My guest is Charles Duhigg, who has written an article called What Does Your Credit Card Company Know About You? It was in yesterday's Times magazine. And you said before we went on the air that you did not write this as something, an attempt to attack the credit card industry. You were just looking into some interesting story. But everybody has responded to it as though you had attacked
them. Right. The credit card company industry right now is essentially the pinata that everyone can afford to take a swing at. There's no one who's going to stand up and defend the credit card companies, including the credit card companies themselves. I mean, they've basically said, we concede that we're in the disadvantaged position right now, and all that we're going to do is try and get this legislation that's going through Congress to be as good as we can hope it to be.
As good meaning as toothless as possible.
Exactly. And they've admitted that there's a lot of practices that are going to have to change, A, because of this new law, but B, because they just took it on the chin. I mean, this financial downturn has been so devastating for credit card companies that a lot of their past assumptions are now out the window.
Well, I want to get to the legislation in a moment, but with the economy contracting, what kinds of customers is the credit card industry looking for now?
Well, two things. First of all, they're going to be focusing on people that they think are guaranteed to pay off their debts, so people who have good credit histories and good backgrounds. But secondly, and this is probably the most important thing, is that they're going to be looking for customers who already have accounts with that particular bank. So at this point, most of the credit card companies are inside large banks. And if Citibank, for instance, has your mortgage and they have a checking account with you and a savings account and your Roth for 401k, they're going to be pushing you to take one of their credit cards because now they have so many more things that they can draw data from to understand who you are and to profile you.
But that's also a reason I'm not seeing as many solicitations with zero interest rates for the next year or so.
Absolutely. That's the other part of it, is that they know that they're in a defensive position, and so they're doing less things to try and attract people. There's this problem of adverse selection in economics and in credit cards in particular, which is that if you put out an offer there, you might not get the types of customers you actually want. So what they're trying to do right now is they're trying to attract people who are good bets. And it turns out people who are good bets, they already have plenty of credit cards. So it's somewhat of a difficult dance for them to do.
Who is J.P. Martin, and how did he change the way that the credit card industry does business?
J.P. Martin was an executive with Canadian Tire. He's now with Walmart in Canada.
Now, Canadian Tire is not just a tire company.
Right. It's a huge, huge retailer in Canada. It's kind of the equivalent of Walmart in the United States. And in 2002, he decided to do kind of an interesting thing. Canadian Tire is one of the largest credit card issuers in Canada. And so he said, well, let's take all of this data that we get and see if we can figure out if people are good bets or bad bets for a credit card company based on what they purchase. And what he found out was that the things that we buy gives companies an enormous insight into our riskiness.
Did that mean he had to look at every purchase somebody had made with a credit card over
Absolutely.
The course
it was,
of a year?
It was like 210 million transactions. Yeah, it literally took him a year to run this experiment. And this is why it was so groundbreaking, is because no one had had the computer power to do it prior to this.
So what kinds of things did he learn about the connections between what people bought and the likelihood that they would pay off their debt with the credit card company?
Well, what he learned was that you can create psychological profiles of people based on what they purchase. So people who bought wild premium birdseed, for instance, almost always paid off their debts. And the reason why, other testing showed, was because these are the types of people who feel a sense of responsibility. They feed wild birds that they don't own. They feel a responsibility towards the world. They feel like they have to pay off their credit card debts. On the other hand, there's people who buy, for instance, skull chrome accessories for their cars. It turns out those people don't feel a sense of responsibility and they don't pay off their debts.
And people who bought those little felt pads that stop chair legs from scratching the floor almost
Exactly.
always pay off their debts.
Right. And in that case, it's not responsibility. It's because they're sort of obsessed with protecting their belongings, be they hardwood floors or their credit rating.
Although that wouldn't have worked with me. I moved into a place, my landlord insisted that I do that. I wouldn't have done it otherwise.
Right.
He might have been confused about me. But he also found that people who bought generic motor oil were more likely to miss a credit card payment than people who bought name brand motor oil.
Absolutely. And again, it gets to the same thing, that there's some people who they spend the extra money on something because they want to protect their engine. And what's interesting, take your example of being forced to buy the felt pads. it's not just one data point that can give us insight into someone's psychological motives. You have to look at hundreds of them. So for instance, Fair Isaac, which is one of these big companies that does this for other companies, they might look at 300 different types of data to determine whether you're going to go delinquent on your debt or not, for exactly the reason you just said, that one purchase could be an anomaly.
Mm-hmm. But it's interesting that J.P. Martin also discovered what the most uncreditworthy bar in all of Canada
right.
was. It sounds like a fun place. Where is it?
Sharks. I think it's called Sharks Pool Bar in Montreal. I've never been there. And I tried to call one day, and they picked up the phone and then accidentally hung up on me. It's a pool bar in Montreal, and it turns out that 47% of people who use their Canadian Tire card at that bar missed four payments in the next 12 months. So
it suggests that that people who are going to have problems with handling their money all hang out together.
Right. Or at least the clientele there is not the type you might want to invite home.
So there are all sorts of things that could be unclear. You mentioned anomalies. If a customer logs into an account at 1 a.m., couldn't that be interpreted in a lot of different ways, from responsible to totally irresponsible?
Absolutely. And that's why you need so many data points. But the logging in at 1 a.m. is a good example, because what the data in a lot of cases shows is that people who log in at 1 a.m. are sleepless. And they're sleepless because they're feeling anxious, possibly about money woes. Now, if they log in five times a day, they might also be anxious, or they might just be one of those kind of anal people who, you know, check all the time, which is a great customer to have.
Or they may be somebody who works until midnight, gets home at 1 o'clock, and decides to take care of the personal stuff before going to sleep.
Absolutely. And so one of the things that the credit card companies look for is not so much it's in part, it's what you're doing. And second of all, it's changes in your behavior. So if you're the type of person who used to never charge groceries on your credit card, and you suddenly start charging groceries, they're going to call you, because what they're worried about is that means that all of a sudden you have a lot less money. And if you have less money, it might mean that you're going to miss a payment.
Aren't there privacy laws that prevent this kind of thing from happening, finding out even where we drink and what that means?
Not right now. There are a lot of privacy laws around the collection of debts, the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. But that doesn't stop a credit card company from looking at data that they collect and using that to create profiles of you. And it should be noted that if there was a law against this, there would be some adverse consequences of it. I mean, one of the things that's happened in the last 10 years is this explosion in consumer credit, which certainly has some bad aspects. But for a lot of people who previously were never able to get credit cards and use them really responsibly, this data mining and this data collection has given them access to cards that have been life-changing for them.
But this is the same sort of thing as buying a home. Some of the people who shouldn't have been given enough credit to buy a home are doing perfectly well, and they're paying off their mortgages, and others are failing.
Right.
But in the end, the cumulative effect is a negative one.
It is right now, right? I mean, we're living through this great downturn, and so right now it's easy for us to say that there is a negative consequence to this. But unfortunately, economics, while it's measured in the macro, when it occurs in the micro, there's a lot of people out there who are in homes and have credit cards that they couldn't get before, and they themselves probably feel like it was a good thing. It's very difficult to parse out sort of the justice of economics, because it tends to affect people so individually, and then we talk about it in a sort of universal sense.
My guest is Charles Duhigg, who has written an article called What Does Your Credit Card Company Know About You? It appeared in yesterday's New York Times Magazine. We will continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. We're back with Charles Duhigg, whose article, What Does Your Credit Card Company Know About You?, appeared in yesterday's New York Times Sunday Magazine. One of the banks you profile for the piece is Bank of America. What is their approach to collecting credit card debt?
Well, Bank of America was kind enough to let me sit in on their training session, and they call their debt collectors customer assistance account managers. Because they believe that what they're doing is, and they instruct in this, is assisting their clients in coming to peace with their debts.
Well, these are low-paid people who are account managers being trained to be almost psychiatrists?
A little bit, yeah. They earn about $35,000 a year. And one of the things that the training focuses on that I sat in on was empathy. I mean, they basically say it's kind of a power trip to be the guy collecting debts at the end of the phone call. And so what Bank of America does is they teach them, don't abuse this position. You want to become friends with the debtor. You want to offer them a solution.
Well, Bank of America is one of the most troubled financial institutions in the country. Would things be even worse for them if they approached their credit card division differently?
If a lot of cardholders stopped paying their debts, things would definitely get a lot worse.
How did they get themselves – they got themselves into this situation through things that had nothing to do with credit cards.
In part. But they also – so part of Bank of America's problems has to do with subprime loans and things outside of the credit card division. But they also a couple of years ago bought MBNA, which was a huge credit card company. And MBNA had specialized in what's called affinity cards. So if you went to, for instance, the University of Michigan, they might call you and say – as a University of Michigan alum, we're going to give you a University of Michigan card, and half of 1% of all purchases will go back to the school.
That's how they got me.
It works. And what they found...
I didn't even go to Michigan. I went to Brooklyn College. Same idea. And it said Brooklyn College on the card.
Absolutely. And what they found was that people have more loyalty to the card that has the little emblem of their school on it, which, of course, doesn't make any sense at all.
Now I'm really upset. I'm no longer with Bank of America, and I decided to break all ties with Brooklyn College because of what happened. That's another matter. The average consumer carries roughly $10,000 in credit card debt.
Yeah.
Usually tied up with marriages, children, all sorts of things. What kinds of personal scenarios are collections agents trained to deal with?
Basically anything. I mean, what they do is they listen very closely to what you tell them, and then they try and find a place where they can create an empathetic bond with you.
But that's kind of fake. It's a fake connection. They're being sympathetic, but actually their goal is simply to get you to give them the money.
Sure. I mean, I think that's one way of looking at it. But the other way of looking at it is that there's a whole bunch of people I spoke to who said, look, no one ever asked me about my money problems before. It was like a millstone around my neck. And then someone calls up and they tell me that they're going to help me solve this problem.
And do they? Are they sometimes willing to make adjustments?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, they are absolutely willing to work with you so that you can pay off your debts, because that's preferable for the credit card company to you walking away. What they sometimes and very frequently won't do is tell you how much they're willing to discount. So, for instance, they'll call you up and they'll say, look, you owe us $28,000. $14,000 of that is fees and interest charges and things you never spent in the first place. I'm going to cut what you have to pay each month, but you have to pay all of it off. Whereas in truth, you might be able to say, look, I want you to forgive $10,000 of it. And they might do that right away. And most people don't know how to ask for that, though.
A former Visa executive told you that today the goal is for customers to get a warm and fuzzy feeling from their credit card company, and added, if we have a deep relationship with you over a range of products and experiences, if we trust each other, you'll listen when we give you advice. I don't know why that sounds ominous to me.
Well, I think it gets back to this basic issue of, you know, in American society today, you can talk about almost anything with your colleagues and friends. You can talk about your love life. You can talk about politics. But when it comes to money, there's a huge sense of a taboo around that. And in part, that's why credit card companies are able to create this bond, is because they're one of the few people who will talk to you about money.
Does a debt collector get a commission?
Very frequently. I mean, it differs from company to company, but in general, yes. A collector will be compensated based on how much money they're able to bring in.
Thomas Gigan, who's a labor lawyer, was on this program recently, and we have a clip from that that might be something that we will find interesting to talk about. Let's listen to it.
In this country, we became addicted to debt. You know, the people pile up mortgages they can't pay. What's the consequence of that? It's going to be huge credit card bills because people are cash poor. So they're going to the banks for the interest rates that are higher than ever. And the deregulation of usury was really a signal to the banking industry and finance that your fiduciary obligations did not matter anymore. This whole long-term repudiation of the notion of fiduciary duty, I believe, began when the banks were told that there were no limits on which they could prey upon people.
Do you agree with that?
To a degree, absolutely.
Now, he used the word usury there. 20% is not uncommon. They go up to 30%.
Right.
I think 30% is the definition of usury, isn't it?
There was a time in this country when you could only charge so much in interest, and the government set those laws. And during the hyperinflation period of the 1970s, those laws didn't work because inflation was so high we had to let banks charge more in interest. And once we took off that control. It was never put back on. And so, yeah, I think there's a lot of people saying right now we need those laws back.
Is that one of the things that's being proposed in this new legislation?
Not really, no. It hasn't gotten the new legislation has not said what the maximum interest rate that you can charge is. And that, of course, is a place where there's a lot of pushback because it's not just credit cards. It's payday lenders. It's corporate loans. If there was a limit on how much interest could be charged, it could move through the entire economy. Not necessarily – now, that's not necessarily a bad thing, but it is something that a lot of people would have feelings on.
They seem to be more concerned in Congress as to whether you're notified that your rate is going to go up.
Absolutely.
Well, that's nice, but if you have nowhere to go, then what's the difference if you're told it's going to happen in a month or 3 months?
Now, they are also putting limits, though, on how much the interest rate can go up from the promised interest rate. So right now what happens very frequently is someone – excuse me – someone has an interest rate of 5%. They miss one payment or they're a couple days late, maybe on a completely different card, and then all of a sudden their interest rate goes up to 30%. What the proposed law says is there's very few situations in which the interest rate can go up. And it has to be something where you're like 60 days late on a payment or you've missed three in a row. So they're trying to protect consumers by saying it just can't go up arbitrarily.
Because anybody can miss a payment. Sometimes the bill doesn't come or it gets misplaced or you think you paid it and you didn't pay.
Exactly. And there's a lot of tricky practices too. There's something called double cycle billing where they change your pay date without informing you of it. And so you're late without even realizing it.
I once had a situation where the company involved did not send me bills, and when then they started giving me a really hard time, and when I called, I spoke to somebody who, I don't know where he was. He definitely wasn't in New York City, and he said to me, "Well, you knew that a bill would be coming. Why didn't you just go to the internet and look us up?" And my thought was, "Well, they'll send me a bill when
right.
they feel it's time for me to pay."
And the question is, because they make it so easy to get the cards, shouldn't they have the same obligation to make it so easy for us to know how to pay back? That's what the law is seeking to remedy. You know, it's a very difficult situation, though, because on the other part of this is the constant response that the consumer should be aware of what they're spending. And to a point, he's probably right. I'm sure that when he said that to you, you said to yourself, "Well, gosh, a couple of months did go by and I didn't see that bill. It probably should have occurred to me to look."
No. I'd been on the phone with them for other reasons.
Okay.
And I thought, but anyway, that's a whole other matter. I resented him accusing me of malfeasance when it was obviously their fault.
Well, and I guarantee you that resentment.
But I could not cancel my Time Warner cable, so I'm stuck with it.
And what's interesting is part of that also might have been a probe, right? Because one of the things that they do is they call up cardholders and they see what type of persuasion works best. Is this the type of person who needs a shoulder to cry on, or is this someone who needs a dose of tough love?
And I said, "Give me a supervisor."
Right. And so you're probably off the tough love list.
My guest is Charles Duhigg, whose article, "What Does Your Credit Card Company Know About You?" was in yesterday's Sunday Times magazine. And this is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. We are going to take a call now from John from Bergen County, New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning, Leonard.
Hi, John. What do you want to talk about?
Quick question. I pay my bills pretty promptly, in fact, very promptly. Someone said to me that if you pay your bills on time and they don't make any interest on you, they may drop you because you're too good a payer. Is that true?
Absolutely. It's one of the things we're seeing right now, which is that for a lot of people who are very, very responsible cardholders, they're seeing their lines of credit being cut and their interest payments or their interest rates going up, because what they're trying to do is they're trying to convince you to stop being one of their customers. If they don't make any money off of you,
you could either be too good a customer or too bad a customer.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. What they really want is they want someone who ever so often misses a credit card payment and has to pay some late fees, or, you know, the interest rates go up and down and they don't complain. If you're really, really responsible, they're probably losing money on you.
Okay. What do you do?
Well, I would say continue being responsible. I think the alternative is not a great one, because it means that you're going to fall behind on your payments. The answer is there's someone out there who's going to give you a credit card. And if you're using that credit card responsibly, you'll be able to always find some avenue for it.
Okay. Thank you for calling us, John. But we have also learned in previous shows that if you move from credit card company to credit card company, no matter how well you pay your bills, that goes on your credit rating and it's a negative.
That is true. But they get a lot of information on that credit rating. I mean, in general, I would say no one should ever try to accumulate debt just to keep a credit card. You'll always be able to find someone willing to give you a credit card, even if it's, say, Amex, who basically makes you pay it off every month.
We have a clip of President Obama addressing this issue in a town hall meeting in New Mexico recently. Let's play it.
There has to be strong, reliable protections for consumers. Protections that ban unfair rate increases and forbid abusive fees and penalties. The days of any time, any reason, anything goes, rate hikes and late fees, that must end. That must end. Second, all forms and statements that credit card companies send out have to be in plain language, in plain sight. No more fine print, no more confusing terms, no more hiding the truth. We're going to require clarity and transparency from now on. Third, we have to give people the tools to shop for a credit card that meets their needs without being afraid of being taken advantage of. So we're going to require firms to make all their contract terms easily accessible, and we're going to give consumers the information they need to do some comparison shopping. And we'll require firms to offer at least one simple, straightforward card that offers the strongest protections along with the plainest terms and prices.
Sounds good. I'm not sure that much of that is going to happen. Last week, the Senate rejected an effort to cap interest rates at 15%. It drew only 33 votes. Obviously, there were an awful lot of Democrats who voted against it, as well as Republicans. Is that because the industry has a really strong lobbying arm? Or
absolutely.
Or Joe Biden comes from Delaware?
I don't know how much Biden played into this in this particular instance, but there is certainly a very, very robust lobbying effort on the part of the banks and banking industry. I mean, one thing that's important to note is that everything that President Obama said, I think everyone can get behind except for possibly the credit card industry itself. And we are certainly going to see change in this industry.
Because they see there's no other option for them.
There's no other option. They concede that change has to come. And these are all good changes. These are things that should be done because the credit card industry has been abusive in many respects. And parts of the industry itself will admit that they've been abusive. But there's another part of this, which is that consumer attitudes towards spending and towards debt, that also needs a change because there's only so – you can lead the horse to water, but if they love slurping up that those credit dollars, it's all going to go downhill.
Now, Liz in Manhattan left a comment on our show page. She says, please be aware that if credit card debt is removed from your balance, you still have to pay tax on it. It'll be reported as unearned income for that tax year.
That's right. So if you – let's say you had $40,000 worth of credit card debt and the credit card company said, okay, we'll write it down to $20,000. That extra $20,000 that they just forgave – you would be charged taxes on, which is
they got you coming and going.
Yeah. Now it's the federal government that's charging those taxes, though. Keep that in mind. So it's not the credit card companies, but there is a lot of challenges there.
Well, you said that you don't think Joe Biden had any effect on this legislation, but many credit card companies set up shop in Delaware, and in the past he's been known as an advocate for the industry.
Absolutely. And I should say I wasn't doing any reporting on this recent congressional push, so I don't know what role Vice President Biden played. But yeah, Delaware, what happened with Delaware was that, A, it's the focus for a lot of companies, but B, they removed their usury laws ahead of almost everyone else. And so as a result, a lot of credit card companies flocked to work out of that state. And then we saw sort of a race to the bottom where all the other states in the union also changed their laws to attract new businesses. And that's part of the problem too.
Steven Scarsdale left a comment on our show page. He said, I'm a very responsible payer with about 5 cards. I only use one regularly. I called up one of my cards to cancel just because I never use it, and they got an agent on the phone who said, what do I need to do to get you to keep this card? And he gave me all kinds of bells and whistles and an interest rate below 10%. He said, I'm still not using the card.
And it's worth thinking
about. The best thing to do is to cancel.
Very frequently it is. I mean, keep in mind also that you know, I think I know people, and probably you do too, and our listeners, there were folks out there who moved their balances from card to card to card because they could get the zero interest rate on transfers for 6 months. So there are a lot of people who benefit from the system and take advantage of it themselves. And if you're one of the people with good credit and access to great credit lines, it's well worth pushing back against your card company and getting those low rates.
Charles Duhigg's article called What Does Your Credit Card Company Know About You? Appeared in yesterday's New York Times, the Sunday Times magazine. I'm very pleased that he came by to talk about it today. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.